Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's a blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez. And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Nauta goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling, 25-20. Got a block for Brown. 50, 10, 5. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Don't win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. Trubisky to the 42-yard line. Oh, my goodness.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A snap. The player inside Cranewood, too. He got it. He's got it. Steamboat's leg muscle. And Blair has done it. Blair has done it.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in, Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Also on Snapchat, snapjhood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back, guaranteed. Just try. Snapchat, snapjhood. Hit follow and then see if I don't follow you back within 12 hours. See? Try it. See what happens. We will hear from Adnan Virk, who covers college football for College Football Final on ESPN. Also, I'm going to get his baseball information because he works with baseball tonight as well. I got to get his Cubs information, so we'll get that as well. And also, he's got that Cinephile podcast. I have not seen Black Klansman. I would like to see that tomorrow. Check that out. Going on over there and take a look at it tomorrow. I'm off day because I don't work Fridays because, well, you know why. It's a holiday.
Yeah, it's your weekly holiday. That's right.
The holiday for religious reasons. That's the reason why. Religious reasons, that's why I don't work on Fridays. My religion is to be off on Friday.
Sounds like a good religion.
Or work 7 days a week.
You won't be spending your Friday at Chatham, will you?
No.
Oh, you go a little bit further
No,
out.
I go a little further out. Yeah, I figured
you would.
Thank you, Davis, for mentioning that. I want to hear the movies. And so that's why I go a little bit further out. Amen. I like to hear the actual dialogue of those movies. Shout out to Studio Grill. So we'll have at 8:30 the bottom of the hour, Ray Flores. We'll get his thoughts about Triple G and Canelo. Big fight this weekend. We'll get his thoughts on which way he's leaning on that fight. We'll get to that coming up at the bottom of the hour here on ESPN 1000. If you are a boxing fan, or if you're going to watch that pay-per-view or watch like I will on Periscope, make sure that you check it out. It should be interesting. We'll hear from Ray Flores come up at the bottom of the hour here on ESPN 1000. Let me get squeezed in a call, and then I got to get to my CFB top 10. Yellow Dino.
Hello. Hey, guys. What are you down on my Cubs for? I predict the Cubs are going all the way to the World Series, man.
All right. Let's head now to college football top 10.
Nobody gives you coverage of college football like the Jonathan Hood Show.
Make up for it. Fires to the end zone. Touchdown!
Coverage on the end.
Caught! What a grab! Barkin still on his feet!
Wow, he is so electric. Just making people miss everywhere.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
It is now time for the college football top 10. Hey, down on you guys are down on my Cubs. You're going all the way. Thank you so much, Dino, for your perspective. I heard you all the way from Oak Lawn.
Yes, he was yelling.
Through the glass. I can hear you from Oak Lawn. Thank you.
He brought some something to back that up, too, you know, which is great.
What was that?
Onto your college football top 10.
So now we move on to some of the storylines here for the college football top 10. Okay, number one, LSU is currently a 10.5-point underdog at Auburn. Since the start of last season, the Tigers are 3-0 against the spread with two outright wins as an underdog. This includes a 27-23 win as a 7-point underdog against Auburn last season. LSU, a 10.5-point underdog. You know, it can be said that for some coaches, they have an ultimate job, right? For Ed Orgeron at LSU, this is his ultimate job. If he fails at LSU as someone who speaks like Bobby Boucher, if he fails at this, this is the end for Ed Orgeron as a head coach. Sometimes it's just the ultimate job. Very similar to Dave Wannstedt, everyone's friend. Dave Wannstedt coached everywhere, including his alma mater, Pittsburgh. When he got fired at Pittsburgh, his own crib, that was the end for Dave Wannstedt. So, to keep our eyes on LSU. Number two, San Diego State is currently a 5.5-point underdog against Herm Edwards in Arizona State. Let me be the first to tell you that I saw both games of Herm Edwards, ESPN's own Herm Edwards at Arizona State. I will be rooting for Herm Edwards. You know why? Because many look at Herm as some caricature and just some loudmouth that and just used to speak in flowery terms about football and like he doesn't know the game. He knows the game. The little secret that you have to know about college football is that 30% of the job is about football. As a head coach, 70% is being able to get all the paperwork together and recruiting and everything else. Administrative. I think Herm can handle the football end. The other 70%, he can do it. Others can do it. As long as he's got a good staff around him, I think he's going to be fine. But I just don't believe in the guy we saw firing up on people on ESPN is the coach that we're going to see. He can coach football.
I think Herm's, I agree, yes, he can coach football. And I also believe, and he's got a breadth of knowledge. Like, he played in the league, he coached in the league. I think Herm's, the way he's motivational and the way he's upbeat and the way he speaks, I think that translates better to college football than it does to the NFL. I think kids react to those things positively more than professional and men do in the NFL.
He's like 65 or whatever, but he's kind of like Pete Carroll in that regard.
Yeah, he is.
He's like 40 with his enthusiasm. So that's number two. I'm going to lose track at some point, but I'm going to try to get to 10. Number three, Houston is currently a 1-point favorite at Texas Tech. The Cougars are 8-1 against the spread and 8-1 straight up in their last 9 games against Power 5 teams. Houston has not really skipped a beat since Tom Herman took the job at Texas. As a matter of fact, Tom Herman, if you asked him seriously, would you rather be coaching the Longhorns or coaching Houston again, he probably would want to be coaching Houston because he was able to build a really great program there, keeping the kids around the Houston area, the Beaumont area. Those kids really didn't leave, and so that's a really good football team there. So keep your eyes on that from a gambling standpoint. Number four, Troy. And I spent so much time in Troy last year. Troy, Alabama. There I was in Troy, Alabama with the UIC Flames. And I thought, my God, there's like 3 stoplights and just like a Sonic and a KFC. And it was just restaurants, the chain restaurants that you'd normally see like all in a row in this one little town here of Troy, Alabama. But I took the trip. It was December and it was 85 degrees. I was totally fine with that. Troy is currently 11.5-point underdog against Nebraska, as I see here. Troy is 11.5-point underdog against Nebraska. The Trojans are 6-0-1 against the spread in their last 7 games as a double-digit underdog. How's that? We will keep our eyes on that game. Another game for you. Georgia Tech is currently a 4.5-point favorite against Pitt. The Yellow Jacks, they have not lost outright in each of their last 7 games as a road favorite. Okay, so those are just a few news and notes for you there in that regard. Let's see if I have a few others here in our college football top 10 here on ESPN 1000 with Jonathan Hood. Let me see. Oh, Hawaii. I was talking to Waddle about this as he was leaving the building today, as I was coming in and he was leaving. Hawaii is currently a 6.5-point underdog at Army. The Rainbow Warriors are seeking their 3rd outright win as an underdog this season, having already pulled upsets at Colorado State and Navy. Those 2 wins were by an average of 13.5 points per game. Hawaii has to travel all the way to the East. I kind of think that Army should be able to take care of it. If I'm Hawaii, if it was possible, I would have already been there. Wednesday, I would have had Hawaii would have been at Army to get you, because it's the body clock thing, right? The body clock thing. Michigan's offense, they showed up. 49 points for Michigan's offense, pretty strong. Duke, the Duke Blue Devils might be for real. They beat Northwestern 21-17. Go Cats. At the crib, not great. UCLA 0-2, just wait for Chip Kelly. Not this year, next couple of years. Watch out now for Chip Kelly at UCLA and Purdue. Jeff Braum, by the way, to think that he was an option at Tennessee this past offseason. And then looking at what's going on with Purdue right now, not happy about the start over there for the Boilermakers in West Lafayette. As you are listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, so glad that you're with us here on this Thursday. Let's go to the man who hosts College Football Final on ESPN and also part of Baseball Tonight. And don't forget the Cinephile Podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, you love movies, check out the Cinephile Podcast. The host of that show is Adnan Virk, and he joins me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Adnan, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Jonathan, you're always my favorite because of the plug for Cinephile. Who cares about the college football and baseball? Cinephile, ESPN app, and on iTunes. Tom Berenger, we just taped with him. Stories from Platoon and Major League. Check it out. You're the best.
I think I'm thinking that maybe, just maybe, your interview with Tom Berenger was better than Levitard's. I'm just going to roll the dice.
I haven't listened to Levitard's yet, but that is a familiar reaction that I've received. Everyone said to me, did you hear it? And I said, well, no, I'm busy doing my own thing. And they said, well, you've got to hear it because it was a train wreck. So I said, all right, well, ours is pretty good. He compared Oliver Stone to Ernest Hemingway. It was a great line and an excellent description once he started talking about Platoon.
I will ask you this, sir. You saw Black Klansman, right?
I did. Loved it. It's my favorite film of the year.
Really? I'm going to go see it tomorrow, so I should go see it definitely, right?
Oh, Jonathan, it's superb, and I'm a huge Spike Lee fan, and that's why when you love someone, you can be honest. And he hasn't made a great film in a long time. 12 years was the last good movie he made, which was Inside Man. 25th Hour was 2002. He Got Game was 98. It's been like a good two decades, and Spike really wowed us. But Do the Right Thing and Malcolm X and Jungle Fever and Mo' Better Blues are one of my favorite films. And I'm just so happy to see an artist of his ability be able to reclaim his fastball. And what's great about it is, it's provocative and it's timely, and you'd expect that with Spike, and he definitely, the subtlety is not his way of stoking the fires. He's a provocateur, and he deals with race in America and also this crazy true-life story. The story behind it is that he got the call from Jonathan Peele, who did Get Out, and he goes, Spike, I got your next film. And he goes, six words, black man infiltrates KKK. And Spike thought he was talking about the famous Chappelle sketch. He said, no, seriously, this is a true story. And it's a credit to Spike to not only make a film that's this powerful. And there's moments if you're going to recoil at some of the language being used, the racial epithets, but it's actually quite funny. And he's able to find the levity within police work and just what it's like to go undercover. And it's so well done by Spike. I think it's going to get nominated for Best Picture, and I think he's finally going to get nominated for Best Director. I'm so happy. You got to go see it.
Download Cinephile. That's wherever you get your podcast, find Adnan Virk and Cinephile. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We were talking earlier, Adnan, about the Cubs and their chances in the postseason. I put a poll up earlier at Tweet J Hood. What is the likely result of the Cubs at the end of the regular season? Some say, well, it's going to be the wild card, but I put NLDS and out, NLCS and out, playing the World Series. Based on this National League and their roster composition, how do you see the Cubs?
Oh, it's a great question, man. It's incredibly topsy-turvy right now. And if you'd asked me about 2 weeks ago, I would have said the Cubs are the team I feel most confident about. The Phillies have now faded off in the East. The Braves are an excellent team, but I just feel like it's a year too soon. In the National League, the Diamondbacks have tapered off a little bit. The Rockies are incredible, but they're not going away because I figured they would have, and the Dodgers would run away with that division. But I think all three teams from the Central make it, meaning I think the Cubs win the division. I think the Brewers are going to make the wild card. And I got the Cardinals, even though St. Louis has a tough schedule down the stretch. So the winner of the West gets in, the other one gets out. So either the Dodgers or the Rockies could miss, which is crazy to think about. But in reference specifically to the Cubs, the reason why I was bullish on them was what Cole Hamels was able to do. Just a terrific acquisition by Theo Epstein and company. I said, okay, if you get Hamels and you match him obviously with John Lester, and Hendricks is fine and Quintana's okay, and a decent bullpen and a great offense. I mean, the biggest thing for me is I look at the National League, and as you know, runs are so scarce in today's baseball. Runs are at a premium. So I'll take the team that can slug it out. And if Rizzo's going to hit leadoff and things are going to work out, great. And if Bodie's going to contribute, awesome. And if Chris Bryant can be healthy, et cetera. But having said all of that, I still do like the Cubs to at least get to the NLCS. This Brewers team is for real. And this series was excellent, which I'm sure you've watched as I have. We had the game last night on ESPN. They're pesky. They've got a tremendous offense. Yelich right now might be my pick for MVP. He's been so good in the second half, whereas other guys like Baez have tapered off a little bit. Freddie Freeman's tapered off a little bit. Pat Carpenter's slowed down a little bit. So I think Yelich is incredible. Lorenzo Cain is in the MVP conversation. Their starting pitching doesn't scare anybody, which is why I give the Cubs the edge. But Hader is remarkable coming out of the bullpen, and they've got a certain feistiness about them. So I like the Cubs, and I like the Brewers a lot.
So, and then does the National League kind of give you that feeling of the the NBA Eastern Conference in that regard. I mean, the Brewers are coming on strong here as of late. The Cubs have been so inconsistent, but I don't see one team in the National League that says, man, they are as strong as the Astros, as strong as Cleveland, or as strong as Boston for sure.
Without question. I feel like I don't care who comes out of the NL, that the American League team will win the World Series, and particularly the two you mentioned, the Red Sox are a juggernaut. I mean, Alex Cora, the first rookie manager to 100 wins since Dusty Baker back in 93 in his first season managing, and the quickest to 100 wins since the Mariners in 01. And I'm well aware that the Mariners did not win the World Series that year, but they were a juggernaut, 160 wins. We all know about that team. And I think the Red Sox are loaded, especially that David Price has pitched recently. He's got a 2.04 ERA since July 23rd. He's very quietly been tremendous in his last 10 starts. Sale came back, at least pitching innings. So if you go Sale, Price, good luck against those two guys. There's a little bit of concern about the bullpen getting it to Kimbrel, and even Kimbrel hasn't been Kimbrel-esque, but their offense mashes. Mookie Betts is the MVP. J.D. Martinez is arguably top five in MVP voting. I mean, up and down their lineup, guys have been attendee contribute, and Jackie Bradley Jr. even is good defensively, Xander Bogaerts, et cetera. So Boston, to me, have a tough time picking against, and Houston had that lull in August, Jonathan, where the A's caught them. But I think that once they kind of got reloaded a little bit, and Correa's a little bit healthier, and obviously Altuve's back, and he's so key to that team, that I like the Astros and the Red Sox above and beyond everybody else. You know, the Yankees are slipping right now. I could see the A's getting home field and beating the Yankees in the wild card game, and they hit home runs. Chris Davis and Matt Chapman are both tremendous. The Indians starting pitching scares me, along with their offense, because Jose Ramirez is amazing, but their bullpen's a real concern. So honestly, if you handicap the best teams in baseball, you go Red Sox and Astros immediately. You might even go A's ahead of the Cubs right now. That's how good the American League is.
And then put on your college football hat now, because we want to talk to you about the game of the week this week in college football. If you had one ticket, where are you going for week three in college football?
Oh, I love this question. I will go with LSU-Auburn. I just think that's a really intriguing SEC matchup, because LSU have been waiting for years for them to do something big. And maybe they won't until that matchup against Alabama, always that first Saturday in November. But Joe Burrow's been good so far, and I like Brissett, the running back, and honestly, their offensive line is fantastic. And one of the best matchups of this weekend is going to be the LSU offensive line against that Auburn defensive line. If you like football in the trenches like I do, then that's a matchup that I think is very compelling. Jarrett Stidham was not very good at all last week, but I do think he'll play better against the LSU defense. But I root for Ed Orgeron. You know, we don't cheer for teams, but I root for people. I like Ed Orgeron a lot, and I'd love to see LSU get over the hump. So I think that's a critical game against Auburn, an Auburn team that had that great week one win against Washington, which unfortunately does the Pac-12 a little bit. In terms of marquee matchups, like Texas-USC is interesting because you're talking about top 10 in most FBS wins and most bowl victories and most national championships, so lots of history. But USC is taking a step back without Donald and Ronald Jones, and Texas in year two under Herman has yet to get to that next level. They haven't been very inspiring at 1-1 so far. So honestly, I'm looking at LSU-Auburn. I think that's going to be the game of the weekend.
Looking at number one Alabama against Ole Miss, that is a 6 o'clock game, Central Time. People are keying in on this game. I still believe Alabama is going to win. Can Ole Miss make it interesting at the very least?
Well, the over-under on it, I'm not a gambler at all, but now it's seeping into the public consciousness, so I have to start learning these things. So the over-under on this is 71, which I was told is the highest ever for a Nick Saban coach team. So that just tells you that the people who are smarter than us say that the offense is going to be great. And right now, it's the first time in a long time, Jonathan, that Alabama's offense is more electrifying than their ferocious defense. That's not that the defense isn't good. It's just that offense is going to put up points. And for Ole Miss, their defense, I think, is going to get ruled over by Alabama, but they can also score points as well. And so that Tamu Tagovailoa matchup at quarterback is going to be a lot of fun. I think a lot of points get scored. I think Alabama wins, but I think if you like offensive football, it's entertaining. And if at least you look at past history, Alabama has dominated the competition, particularly in the SEC, but Ole Miss is a team that's given them some issues, 2-2 over the last four seasons. So I don't really believe in that kind of stuff, but if you want to feel like, hey, Ole Miss just plays Alabama better than other teams, that certainly is accurate. And if somehow their defense can put together a Herculean effort and slow down Tagovailoa and the Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, maybe they have a puncher's chance.
Looking at the Big Ten, Adnan, if I told you that for sure Ohio State and Wisconsin are the favorites, can you give me a third option that can sneak into those top two?
A team that I like, Jonathan, is Penn State. And at the start of the year, I just said, listen, pick a team off the board a little bit, because Clemson and Alabama, I think, are going to be in the playoff. And then I said, well, maybe Oklahoma reps the Big 12. Washington, after that week one loss, Pac-12 chances take a hit, because UW is the only team you really feel could break through. So that's like, what's the Big Ten team? And I said, well, Ohio State's the trendy pick, and so far their offense has been amazing. Dwayne Haskins even better than what JT Barrett was providing, and Mike Weber's good, although inferior opposition should be noted. The big game, obviously, is against TCU, and they're really good defense this week in Fort Worth. But back to Penn State, you know what, McSorley's amazing. I mean, he's had thrown a touchdown 30 straight games. I think he's a top five quarterback in college football. They lose Saquon Barkley. Obviously, he was a key cog, but I do think they have balance now in their offense, and their defense is solid. Now, I say all that, and I was having a heart attack when I saw them almost lose to Appalachian State week one. But I figure every team gets a mulligan. They looked a lot better in week two. You're right to say Ohio State and Wisconsin are the clear favorites, but maybe Penn State can crash the party. And here's the biggest reason why, Jonathan. They host Columbus this year. So it's always a little bit easier when you're hosting that big game at Happy Valley rather than going to Columbus.
Okay, so I'm on ArcLight Cinemas, and I've clicked at my tickets for Black Klansman tomorrow night. It's my off night before we go back into work on Saturday. Is there a second choice for that's what's out right now that you like?
You know, Crazy Rich Asians is a romantic comedy, which has done a lot of buzz. Rom-coms are not my forte, Jonathan, but I did take my wife because she really wanted to see it, and she enjoyed it, so that's your target market there. So if there's a lady you'd like to take along with you, Crazy Rich Asians is a good choice. For my personal taste, I just thought it had too many of the familiar hallmarks of romantic comedies, you know, stern matriarch, sassy best friend, romantic vows, etc. But it's sweet. And listen, it's nice to see diversity for a change. You haven't seen a film with an all-Asian cast since Joy Luck Club in 1993 that wasn't dealing with Kung Fu. So I do applaud the filmmakers for making it. Not necessarily my cup of tea, but Crazy Rich Asians is out there. But honestly, if I had the choice to see two movies, I'd probably just see Black Klansman twice.
Okay, do you have a burner, a secret copy of White Boy Rick yet?
I don't. You know, my friend Jamel Hill, who unfortunately is leaving ESPN, but she's going to do bigger and better things. We were texting, actually. She hadn't seen Black Klansman yet. And I was telling her, you got to see it. And she loves Spike Lee as I do. And she mentioned a good film that I forgot, Get on the Bus. It's a really underrated Spike Lee movie. And I said, oh, yeah, I love that movie. And I'm one of the few who actually like Bamboozled. I know not many people like it, although Jamel also says she thinks it's all right. But she was telling me, she's from Detroit, as you know, and White Boy Rick, she was going to the screening of it. And, you know, being from Detroit, she was, that's a famous story about the guy that's 14, 15 years old and became a local drug lord. I love the trailer for it. McConaughey looks excellent as this dad who's clearly not the most responsible parent going. But it's gotten mixed reviews so far. So to be honest with you, I'm not as eager now that I've read a few things. It's a little bit all over the place, a little bit of a mess. But that trailer looked good, and the subject matter was definitely up my alley.
Okay, well, I'll keep my eyes on it, but for sure, I've locked in tickets during our conversation. So definitely seeing Black Klansman tomorrow. I'll let you know.
Yeah, please do. Just holler, tweet me, text, whatever you got to do. Let me know, because I'll be really despondent if you don't like it as much as I do.
And then I'm glad you spent some time with us, as always, in Chicago. Thanks for coming on.
Jonathan, always fun, man. I love Chicago. We were back there in August. We had the deep dish, but it wasn't one of the major places. We did not go Giordano's or Lou Malnati's, but still solid, man. God, I dream about it all the time. Chicago in the summer cannot be beat.
No, there's no question about it. Wait, as we speak now, oh, there's snow falling. Oh, my. Yeah.
No, there's not. Oh, my God. You had me for a second. I'm like, oh, my God, we got hurricanes. We got snow in Chicago. Oh, God.
Oh, man. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, man. You take care.
It is Adnan Virk with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Coming up, we will hear from Ray Flores right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
From your hood, from your hood, from your hood, from your hood to J-Hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted, I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Ladies and gentlemen, we go to the scorecards after 12 rounds of boxing. Adelaide Bird scores it 118 to 110 for Canelo.
Whoa!
Dave Moretti scores it 115-113 for Triple G. And Don Trella scores it 114-114, a three-way split.
Draw.
This is officially a draw.
That's how it went down the last time. Triple G and Alvarez were in the squared circle together. Horrendous call. But it happened. As you're listening to ESPN 1000, the ESPN app, we usually would do Tales from the Hood right here, and as always, sponsored by Northwestern Football, Chicago's Big Ten team. Terrific home games for the Northwestern Wildcats this season, go to NUSports.com, NUSports.com, for more information on how you get tickets for Northwestern's football home schedule. Ray Flores covers mixed martial arts and boxing for various promotions across this country and around the world. He is our boxing slash MMA expert. He joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app live from California. Hello, Ray.
Jonathan, good evening to you. Happy belated birthday, my friend. Virgo season is in full effect.
Yes, and the same to you, sir. As always, Virgo season always in effect. Nick Friedel and I had a drink on your behalf. Usually you'd be filling that third chair, but we drank enough for all three of us the other night. So
I greatly appreciate it, my friend.
I got to ask you, we can't talk about a fight without having you on the show, saying this is going to be a big one here. Follow the hashtag Triple G, GGG, and Canelo 2. What do you remember most about that first fight? What stood out stylistically about both fighters in fight number one?
The fact that Gennady Golovkin was the one pushing the issue. He was coming forward. He was making Canelo fight. Canelo, in the second half of the fight, started showing these refined boxing skills. But in my opinion, Jonathan, he started too late. And the judges gave the fight, and they said that it was a draw. But I thought Gennady Golovkin was more aggressive for the first, probably from the first round on to about the eighth round and ninth round. And then Gennady Golovkin's age started to show, and Canelo started to really land bigger, more authoritative shots. But I did see that Triple G was the one controlling the fight for the most part.
You know, what is interesting is that those that are novice fans that will look at this fight and say, well, we saw what happened, how Triple G got screwed in the first fight, so why should I come back? But from a dollars and cents standpoint, you would know this better than I. How healthy is the sport of boxing despite some of the screw jobs that we see on some of these big events, especially the pay-per-view events?
Jonathan, this is the most prosperous that I've ever seen boxing in all my years being involved in it. There's so many different networks putting big money behind boxing. Fox, ESPN, this new online network, DAZN, ESPN Plus is becoming invested. Pay-per-view, the numbers are doing very well. I mean, there's so many different entities that are getting involved in the sport of boxing, and there is such a massive demand for the sweet science. This is the healthiest that I've ever seen boxing in all my years being a part of it.
All right, let's talk about what you expect here. Let's go back to that first fight. Why was Triple G so aggressive and seemingly, especially on your scorecard, winning the fight? What did Triple G do well?
He decided to cut off the ring for the most part in the first half of the fight. He worked behind his jab, and he made Canelo think about that big right hand that he lands. When Gennady Golovkin lands a big right hand, Jonathan, it almost spells disaster for his opponents. Also, he has a very good check left hook, and it took Canelo Alvarez the first half of the fight, if not more, to get adjusted to the power and timing one Gennady Golovkin. So that's what I think the difference was for Triple G. He's going to have new wrinkles to his game because Canelo Alvarez, I heard, is coming in leaner. He's been working on his speed more, but that just means that Gennady Golovkin's timing has to be that much better than the first fight because timing will beat speed any day out of the week.
Ray Flores with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We talk about Triple G and Canelo on pay-per-view coming up on Saturday. Now, from Canelo's standpoint, the performance-enhancing drugs, the thing that really kind of stopped his career, now back into the ring here. What did you like most about Alvarez to make you think that, hey, he should have been able to be obviously more better in that last fight against Triple G?
I just think that because he's off of, he tested positive for clenbuterol, and that helps to, that's a performance-enhancing substance. I think he's focused on getting leaner, faster, and really understanding that he's going to have to beat Gennady Golovkin to the punch. But, Jonathan, the positive test that he had, I think they gave him a slap on the wrist. A six-month punishment is nothing. He should have been given a year punishment. But as you talked about earlier in the segment, dollars and cents, this fight is going to draw massive business, which is why this fight is happening 1 year later, because it would have lost a lot of momentum if it got pushed back to May of next year.
Do you think that in this fight, before I ask you your official prediction, do you think in this fight that because now he's off the juice, that that Canelo could be a little faster from a strategy standpoint against Triple G?
I think he can, because, look, Jonathan, he looked like he was built out of granite on the first fight. And, look, I'm Mexican, Canelo's Mexican, so I eat a lot of carne asada and arachera, and I work out a lot. I don't look like Canelo Alvarez. Come on now. Let's be honest here. So the fact that he looks like he was, you know, an Adonis says to me that now that he's off this stuff, he's going to be quicker, leaner, and be more mobile compared to the first fight, because he looked tight during their first matchup, and that affected him dramatically.
From a weight standpoint, do you know if Canelo weighs less than the last fight?
I would have to say, from all my sources, that I'm hearing that Canelo Alvarez is lighter than the first fight, okay, but also that he might be dealing with, and this is all hearsay, but he might be dealing with a sore right hand because of how hard he's been training. We'll find that out on Saturday night, but those are what my sources are telling me to maybe look out for.
Okay, so which way are you leaning for this fight? Can you give me a strategy, first and foremost, from Triple G? How can he be able to have that same momentum he had in the last fight?
So if Gennady Golovkin's to win this fight, Jonathan, he's going to have to work off his jab, and also with Canelo Alvarez being faster and more lean and quicker, he's going to have to attack the body. Triple G's going to have to attack the body and take away the legs of Canelo Alvarez. If you're Canelo Alvarez on the opposite side, you also have to work behind the jab, and you can't wait to throw punches. As Gennady Golovkin's throwing, Canelo Alvarez has to send a punch immediately right at Gennady Golovkin over the top of his guard. He's going to have to be able to have those flurries towards the end of the round, similar to that when Sugar Ray Leonard fought Tommy Hearns and Marvin Hagler, when he kind of did the shoeshine kind of a thing. Canelo Alvarez is going to have to do that and rattle off 5-6 punch combinations in the last 30 to 45 seconds of the round. And I think he can steal some rounds if he is successful on Saturday night.
All right, what about the other side? What's the strategy now for Canelo?
Canelo Alvarez is going to have to work off his jab, Jonathan, and really throw a lot more combinations. In his first fight, it was one or two punches at a time. He's going to have to throw 3, 4, 5 punch combinations and also move his head, because Canelo Alvarez has a stationary head. When you have, and you're throwing 4 or 5 punch combinations, and you have a stationary head, Gennady Golovkin can land that big shot. He's going to have to move his head, throw those 5 punch combinations, and use his footwork to get out of danger.
Who do you like?
I'm still leaning towards Gennady Golovkin. I think he has that chip on his shoulder. I think he still hasn't hit father time, and I think Gennady Golovkin pulls out the victory and finally gets the unanimous decision victory that he deserves. Gennady Golovkin is close to being a crossover star, but Saturday night makes him one.
So you're saying it's going to the distance then? It's going to go to the scorecards?
I think it'll go to the scorecards. I know all 3 judges that are involved, they're quality judges. Thank goodness that there's no Adelaide Bird. Thank goodness there's no CJ Ross involved. Quality judges in Las Vegas, neutral territory. Also, Jonathan, I expect a 50-50 crowd at the T-Mobile Arena. The Mexican fans are angry. They're upset. A lot of them are supporting Gennady Golovkin.
If Canelo falls short, what does that do for his career? That would just be his second loss, well, along with 49 wins. I wonder what that does for him if he falls short against Triple G.
It derails the hype train, Jonathan, because there are a lot of up-and-coming, blossoming stars, and it takes a lot of the luster behind Canelo Alvarez, and it makes people wonder if he was doing and using these performance-enhancing substances while he was in his heyday. That's what it leads. The jury will be out on Canelo Alvarez if he's not successful on Saturday night.
What do you think of the card overall? There's a junior middleweight title fight. There's an interesting middleweight fight I'm interested in with Spike O'Sullivan against Lemieux. Also, Chocolito Gonzalez against Fuentes is a junior bantamweight match. Is there anything on the undercard that interests you?
I like David Lemieux and Gary Spike O'Sullivan. O'Sullivan has probably the best mustache in all of sports. He
right.
can fight. He's from Ireland. David Lemieux is kind of, you know he's going to come throw a lot of punches because he's susceptible to being outboxed, but he's very limited. So a limited fighter against Gary Spike O'Sullivan will be fun. Chocolatito, we're going to find out, does he have anything left in the tank? He was one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world and then got knocked out a couple of times. What does he have left? Then you have, there are a lot of Jaime Munguia, who I think is one of the best 154-pounders in the world, only 21 years old, world champion. Can he go on? What about his opponent? That's pretty much a layup. All those questions we'll find out, but I'm curious with the Lemieux and O'Sullivan fight.
The Jaime match you mentioned, 30-0 with 25 knockouts against Brandon Cook at 20-1. That could steal the show. That you say he's 21 years old. He's a Mexican brawler, yeah. Right?
Yeah, Jaime Munguia is a Mexican brawler. He's a world champion. You know, he beats Adam Ali, who defeated Miguel Cotto. And Brandon Cook has nothing to lose and everything to gain. So if he's in Vegas and he wants to be a gambling man and put himself out there, then I think it could make for some compelling television. But again, the fight's starting a little bit earlier on the East Coast and on the Central Time. So hopefully people watch, because I think it will be an interesting fight.
Okay. So tell me this. By the way, are you going to Vegas, or will you be watching this from your high atop your loft in Santa Monica?
No, I'm going to be enjoying myself here in Santa Monica.
Okay. All right. Well, I will ask you this, because one for the highlight reel, you actually called a fight in which a fighter left the ring before the bout started. Yep. I mean, what? Okay. All right. So you're with two other guys doing that broadcast, right? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so you're locking in and getting ready to call this fight because you got all the notes and you're ready to go. What is, as you look at your monitor, what is the thing that comes across your mind when you see that fighter walk out of the ring as you get ready to call that fight?
It's almost like a Jim Ross moment, like, my God. I didn't obviously say that on the air, but I was like, he's leaving the ring. I think that's all I kept saying. I'm like, he's leaving the ring. He has left the ring and headed straight to the back. I could not believe it. It's something I've never seen before. It blew my mind, and it was almost unfathomable. I thought he was going to maybe take a punch and then go down easy, collect a paycheck. But Jonathan, up until this point thus far, he has not been paid.
Oh, what's the name of the fighter? What's his name?
His name was, why does his name escape me? Oh, my goodness.
He's not that important if you can't remember.
Curtis Harper?
Curtis Harper is his name. Yes, that's correct.
Curtis Harper. And so did you find out why he left? I mean, that's on YouTube. Everyone, you just type his name in, you could be able to see Ray call that. Yeah. Do you know why that happened?
One of our reporters went to the back and said that he was complaining about that he was being paid too little, which he was paid $6,000. He was supposed to make $6,000. He knew the fight was going to be on TV, but the guy just wanted to be a clown and make a statement, in which it has backfired on him, and I think he's blackballed himself from the sport.
That is just unbelievable. Every time I see that video, I'm like, what happened? He just left for no reason. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, it was bizarre, Jonathan, but at the end of the day, it was on SportsCenter, so it benefited me. So for the Ray Flores business, Curtis Harper, if I see him ever, I'll buy him a drink and say, thank you, sir.
I know that's restaurant quality for you for the Ray Flores business, because you're the one to call that nonsense of fighter walking out of the ring before the fight starts. You guys see that on YouTube, guys, if you missed that. Well, we're looking forward to Triple G and Canelo. As always, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Jonathan, always appreciate it, my friend. You ever need me, I'm here for you, my man. Again, happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much. It's Ray Flores from Fox Sports and ESPN and Sky Sports. There's so much for mixed martial arts, boxing, MMA with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. All right. So the Chicago Blackhawks hit the ice at the United Center this fall with an exciting original six matchup as they take on the Toronto Maple Leafs on Sunday, October 7th. Great seats are still available for the home opener. And all season long, come see Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, skate with the rising stars like Alex Debrecant and Nick Schmaltz. Visit ChicagoBlackhawks.com, pick out your favorite games, and purchase tickets to see your Blackhawks play now. ChicagoBlackhawks.com is where you go. All right, don't forget, if it's Thursday, you know how we do it, right? Every Thursday, 9 o'clock, you know what we do. It's
Throwback.
Throwback Thursday coming your way at the top of the hour here on ESPN 1000.
Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I'd like to remind you to check out the Under the Hood podcast. Two terrific guests on the Under the Hood podcast. One is Fred Mitchell, longtime writer with the Chicago Tribune. He's written 11 books. He's going to work on a 12th. I can't reveal what it is. I'll let you listen to it for yourself, but it's a really good project that he's working on, Fred Mitchell. Also, Lamon Rucker from the hit TV show Greenleaf. You may not watch it, but your wife may watch it. Greenleaf, that's on the OWN network. Lamon Rucker, Steelers fan, Steelers apologist, but also someone who has been doing soap operas for a long time and now is hooked on with the OWN network, the Oprah Winfrey Network, and working with Greenleaf. Check out those interviews. Again, Under the Hood podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Two terrific interviews as well as just all of our shows hourly. We have it up there, Under the Hood podcast. It's heard across the country and around the world. We want you to listen to it to find it, Under the Hood podcast with me, Jonathan Hood, wherever you find your podcast. All right, you know what's coming up next, right? You know what's next? Throwback Thursday. Oh, this is going to be a good one. I got a feeling.
As I combine all the juice from the mind, heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.